time to talk about what's going on in the news this week. And with me to do that is Kirsty James from Wales. Kirsty is a campaigns officer in Wales for RNIB and does a fantastic job there. And is joining me this week to talk about three topics. We're going to be talking about eye tests and prescriptions and the availability of those. We're also going to be talking about a rather interesting story around tactile tartan as well. So, yes, that's all to come up. Someone has come up with a tactile tartan, believe it or not. So that's coming, but let's kick things off with Kirsty. Hi, Kirsty. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Wilson, it's great to have you here. I believe it's a cool and autumnal day in Wales.
Yes, it's perfect for walking.
Oh, fantastic. But I completely disagree with the concept of walking, but yes, I'm sure it is a lovely day for that. Right, let's get into the news then. There's lots to talk about. And the one I wanted to kick off with was a story I saw this week that I thought you might have a view on. And this is an interesting one. It's all around the qualifying age for eye tests and prescriptions. There's a suggestion out that perhaps the qualifying age should be raised up to 67. So, you know, if you're 67 years old, from that age onwards, you should get free eye tests and free prescriptions. However, if you're below that age, you wouldn't. You would have to pay. And this raises the age from 60, which would mean that those who are, and this is the argument, those who are still in work can continue to pay. Where do you stand on that?
I have concerns about this around eye health, because obviously we're told that we should have our eyes tested every 3 years, and we already know that not everybody is doing that. But once they know, somebody knows, oh, you can have a free eye test when you're 60, a bit like when you get a bus pass, it's a bit exciting. It's like, oh, I've never thought about using public transport, but now because it's free, I'm going to. It's a bit, I can imagine it's a bit like that with the eye test at 60. Now, what can happen for some people in that eye test is that eye conditions that can be prevented are detected. Now, my concern is, if that person isn't getting a regular eye test and only when they've had that free one, that then the age is, you know, it's going a lot longer before that, that eye condition that could be prevented is no longer preventable. And that's my concern only around eye health, really, and just making sure that how many people are actually going to get regular eye tests at that age.
Well, this is it. And I think also, let's not forget the postcode lottery that exists with this as well. You know, in Scotland, for example, you get free eye tests and you get free prescriptions at any age. And I often find that rather interesting that in other parts of the country, you don't get that at all. I mean, that must irritate people.
Yeah, I can imagine it does. But then it's a bit like in Wales, we get free prescriptions and other parts of the country don't. The UK don't, so yeah.
I mean, it should really be one system for all, really, shouldn't it? I mean, it shouldn't be broken up like that.
Yeah, in the ideal world, that would be brilliant. It would be much simpler for everybody, I suppose.
But of course, the argument there is money, and this is the problem. It comes down to money. So the argument here made by the Association of Accounting Technicians, whoever they are, have come up with this idea. It sounds like a made-up company, doesn't it? The Association of Accounting, whatever. But these guys, anyway, have come up with this suggestion, and it's based on the fact that, you know, people who are in their 60s are probably still working because, of course, the retirement age is 67, so they should pay. But, of course, I guess that does impact on people who are not in employment. And there's maybe an argument that should be said, perhaps, that the number should be lowered, not raised.
Yeah, just because of eye health and looking after your eyes, isn't it? Making sure maybe people would be more likely to go and get regular eye tests. I think surely if they are being missed because they're not going, it's going to cost them a lot more money in the long run with operations or medication and things. I don't know. I'm a bit, in my opinion, a bit suspicious of it, to be honest, if it is actually going to save money.
Well, it's an interesting one for sure. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with this. I don't know if I imagine this is just talk at the moment. I don't know if there's any suggestion that this be enacted. I do think limiting people's options to eye tests is a really dangerous thing, you know, because it's like you said earlier, if people think they've got to pay for it, they're not probably going to do it as regularly. I mean, look at the subject around dentistry and teeth, people who don't go and get their teeth checked because they just think, I can't afford it. What if he says to me, I need a lot of work done? I can't afford to get it done. And equally, yeah. I think with eye tests, people are concerned that they go to the dentist, the optician. If you go to the dentist, you really do need an optician. But if you go to the optician and he says or she says, look, we need to get you some new glasses, there's that fear of, well, how much is that going to cost? And if you've got maybe two kids and they both need glasses, oh, so, you know, there's fear around
agree.
That. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Tartan. What's your views on tartan?
Oh, so I read that story with Anna, and I thought it was lovely, really beautiful idea. And I think what struck a chord with me really about it was not just that obviously she wanted it to be more accessible clothing, but the fact that Anna wanted to sort of meet with blind and partially sighted people. So Anna became a volunteer for RNIB and then set up focus groups and really did find out what people wanted. And so when I could only see a little bit of the pictures, I'd be interested to see some of her other work, but a more clearer picture of all the different textures and the button using it. So it didn't look different. And Anna could have just made a jumper with different textures and buttons on and just said, oh, that's inclusive. But, you know, anyone can do that. But what Anna did is took the time to find out what makes it more accessible. I thought it was lovely all round, really.
It's funny because, you know, when I read this story, I kind of thought, is this a bit of a joke? You know, not so much a joke, but just a bit of one of those kind of, I almost thought of it as a bit of an and finally story. But actually hearing you talk about it and thinking about it a bit more seriously, I guess it's a case of, well, yeah, it is something that is quite important. Because what if you can't, you know, it's one of those things, trying to make the world more accessible, in my view, is always a good thing. So if we can make the world more accessible in some ways, then why not? You know, why would you not want to do that? This is The Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Stephen here with you. Kirsty James is with me in Wales today. And, you know, Wales, does Wales have tartan? I mean, that's a terribly ignorant question to ask, but do you've got tartan there?
Yeah, there is.
I don't know.
People wear it to weddings.
Right.
Because it's Celtic. I wouldn't say it's as strong as probably when you go to Scotland. But I know I've seen men at weddings wearing it and things.
Yeah, well, it's family, isn't it? It's actually, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's not really attached to the country. It's attached to the family. So it's a clan of tartans.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these different things. But I mean, Wales very much Celtic, Ireland as well. So yeah, it makes sense that you would have your own types of tartan. But interesting, we're hearing this story about a woman who has come up with her own idea to make tartan more accessible, which I was saying earlier, Kirsty, it kind of seems a bit odd to me in some ways that where did that idea come from? You know, who was sitting in the middle of in their house in the middle of the night thinking, do you know what the world needs? It needs tactile tartan. But, you know, this woman has, and actually a lot of blind people are quite appreciative of it, I imagine.
Yeah, I think that it is. To be honest, I haven't really thought about clothes being accessible. I didn't feel that I've been held back. But what I did get from a personal point of view made me realise, actually, I wear a lot of clothes with different textures. And things have got to feel right. Mm. So if things are plain, well, it doesn't feel right. And that's been something from sight loss, from when I had sight loss, that's quite important to me. So I wonder why if the tartan feels really nice. But I don't think that we are discriminated against by all means of non-accessible clothing. And, you know, a top is a top in some instances. But the thought that Anna's put into the project that was done is beautiful, I thought, really thoughtful.
Yeah, this brings up an interesting topic, doesn't it? It brings up the could we and therefore should we around this, because accessible fashion isn't something that I don't think we've ever talked about. And I often wonder, is, you know, when this kind of thing comes up with stories like this, is this something we should do? Should we look at ways, and I say we, I mean, should the fashion industry look at ways to make clothing more accessible, more understandable? I don't know how you do that, though.
I think around labels, as in, you know, knowing the size of the clothes, how to wash it, you know, making those labels more accessible, whether you could have some sort of technology to link up, you know, a bit like CNAI, I suppose, that would then tell you how the clothing needs washing. I think that's the only way it's not accessible. So going into the shop, but then, I don't know, if people who are able to use the internet and online shopping, they can choose the right sizing, I suppose.
Do you find, how do you do it when you go shopping?
I can't go shopping on my own. I go with like my mum and people I trust.
Right.
You know, to tell me. But that's more sort of like a girly point of view, really. That does look good. But yeah, choosing sizes, knowing the price and things. I've been had a little bit a few times where I've misread the price and then I've had to pay over what I wanted to. But, you know, you feel embarrassed when you're at the till.
That's what I tell my wife. I always tell her that I misread the price. and it was significantly more expensive than I thought it was. I was horrified. but that only tends to happen to me in the Apple store.
Right. Okay.
But she doesn't believe that at all.
But that's
interesting because, you know, going shopping, yeah. This is something my wife talks about a lot. Because, I mean, personally, I'm a guy who, and I'm not going to say I'm a guy like a typical guy, because actually I think in some ways I'm not a very typical guy these days. A lot of guys will go out, they will spend a lot of time finding the right fashions, creating the look and all of that. But just from my point of view, and it's partly a visually impaired thing, but it's also just a lazy thing. If I go into a shop and I know it's a pair of jeans that I want, I'll just ask them give me a pair of jeans that, you know, aren't covered in paint or, you know, covered in any rubbish, and just, you know, give me something that I can wear every day to work and I'm happy. And give me it in a size, and that's it. You know, that's it for me. And then I walk out the store. But I know that, you know, if you're going shopping, and my wife does, when she goes shopping, she wants to know the colours and the styles and, you know, the sizes. And knowing all of that is actually the challenge. So that's interesting.
And when shops are over, sort of, there's too much in them, I just walk out. I can't.
Yes, too much.
Processed, yeah, it's too much to take. Because I still have some sight. I find it overwhelming. I think that there is a lot to be done with making sort of more accessible shopping, I suppose.
Yeah. But, do you have what you would call useful vision or useless vision?
Yeah, I do have useful vision. I'm totally blind in my central vision, so I've got peripheral.
But I call mine useless. Do you call yours useful?
It is useful. Yeah. it depends. Depends if. I'm actually seeing what I think I'm seeing, you know, so it's like, it's all right, yeah. I'm just grateful that I can see a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, what about the yellow bikes then? So these are yellow bikes that are doing the rounds. Some might argue nice and accessible, because if you have got some sight, you'll see them. But apparently you're finding them in trees and finding them in rivers and finding them everywhere. These are dockless bikes. Essentially, these bikes that you just hire out for maybe a day or an hour or whatever you're doing. I think they started off in London. They were called the Boris bikes for a while. But there's a new, I think it's a Chinese company that are behind these ones. And these bikes are kind of popping up everywhere. But people aren't returning them, essentially. And because of that, they're kind of being left everywhere. And they're getting in people's ways. Have you experienced anything like this?
Yeah, so I'm going to put my campaign hat on now.
Okay.
I think,
it's a lovely hat, by the way.
I know, yeah. I think I'm all for. I think that it's great that you can get bikes and you can cycle from one part of a city to another, you know, and put them on. But I think more awareness needs to be raised, like how they're being abandoned. Like maybe they're rented too cheap, that people have got the money just to waste, put it in a tree or leave it in a stupid place. I came across one that was left right on the top of steps.
Oof,
and if it wasn't for me having a guide dog, if I was a cane user, I would seriously hurt. Like, you know, if I didn't find that in time, if I was walking quickly, for instance, like, it would have been quite dangerous. I think that there's a lot of work to be done around making sure that people are leaving them in the correct places. Are there enough docking stations? Why is this happening? You know, people just being lazy? Yeah, I just don't understand. When I've seen some of the pictures in the news, I'm like, how? Why have you done that? At what point in your mind you thought, yeah, this would be a great idea to leave this in the middle of a street?
Well, that you're right. I mean, it must be to do with, because I would have thought if you didn't return the bike, you would get fined something.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was with the. I remember when the Boris bikes came along, and then there was other schemes. I think it was Next Bike is another one that does lot of stuff in the UK. And, you know, those companies will fine you if you don't return the bike. So you don't, I haven't heard of this problem before until these yellow dockless bikes appeared. Now suddenly they're being left everywhere. So you're maybe right that the fine maybe just isn't worth it, or people don't care, which, you know, if you've got that kind of money to throw away, then wow.
Yeah.
But it seems to be enough people are doing it. You know, it's not just one or two.
It's almost, it goes back down to awareness, though. It's the same as like the pavement parking, isn't it? People, unless you've got children, or you know people in wheelchairs, or you know people who have got blind and partially sighted, it's not necessarily going to be at the source, the front of your mind, not to do that.
Yeah.
So I think it's like more awareness needs to be done around just people thinking a little bit more, but respecting as well, respecting their cities and towns, and looking at, you know, planning the journeys a bit better, you know, instead of just leaving it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, even if you're not going to return it, why not just take it to work with you and, you know, take it back later, you know, why the rush?
They are fantastic for built-up cities, you know, people who live in apartments and can't store bikes, you know, it's a fantastic incentive to cycle. But I'm just interested as well in Wales if this really is a problem. I'm sometimes I feel like trying to find out from blind and partially sighted people or anyone really who will come across these bikes, if it is an issue, if they are being sort of left in silly places. I'd be interested to find out.
Yeah, and the company itself maybe should use this perhaps as a bit of a campaign, as a lever to encourage people to think more about it, you know, be more socially responsible. You're being socially responsible enough to use the bike, you know, so why not be even more socially responsible and don't leave it in a blind person's path? Okay,
but
well,
anyone, really, not just if you're blind as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. For anyone, yeah. Kirsty, it's been great talking to you. Thank you for joining us in the News Review this week. We'll look forward to catching up soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.